Hello and welcome to the Planet Waves Eclipse Reading covering 2019 and 2020 eclipses across the Cancer and Capricorn axis. I am recording this on the 29th of June 2019, a little bit ahead of the total solar eclipse on the 2nd in Cancer. It's been a while since we've had eclipses on the Cancer-Capricorn axis. The eclipses run in a cycle of approximately a decade. The nodes take 9 years to go around. The eclipses follow the lunar nodes, but it's a little bit loose. And so the nodes themselves have an 18-year cycle. But, for example, the last time there was a pair of Cancer-Capricorn eclipses was in the summer of 2009, 10 years ago. And though the past is not always, or perhaps not at all, the best predictor of history, you will get an indication of how you responded to Cancer-Capricorn eclipses the last time around. Although it's a whole different sky right now, in particular, because there is so much, I was going to use the word pressure, I guess that's a fair enough word to use, coming from Capricorn, with a few different things going on. I think by far the most noteworthy movements in the planets right now are coming out of Capricorn, though Aries is involved. And by the way, I've got some fantastic writing about this in Intelligence, the 2019-2020 reading, where I've broken this down in detail, like in 2 7,000-word articles that are like little novels about the Capricorn-Aries thing going on, which I'll summarize here. To start with, you know, we're looking at the Saturn-Pluto conjunction in Capricorn. That has been building since 2017. Pluto's been in Capricorn since early 2008. I think came in January, February, right around the time when Obama was securing the Democratic nomination. We're getting close to it, so that's the presidential election of 2008, McCain versus Obama, if you want a historical reference point for when Pluto entered Capricorn. And then soon after that, the eclipses began on the Cancer-Capricorn axis. And things have developed quite a bit since then. And so now we have these eclipses in the context of another arguably much larger event, which is the Saturn-Pluto conjunction, which is one of those world-changing aspects. There are just these events that take place in the history of astrology that that are associated with major turning points in the history of the planet, and now we are at one. And the eclipses in Cancer-Capricorn are looked at one way, a kind of enhancement, and looked at another way, an accelerant, and then looked at another way, it's this synchronous meshing of these two aspects of the landscape of time. And that's what astrology really is a study of. It's a study of the landscape of time. And we each carry around our own little garden of time, you might say, and that fits into the larger pattern of the Earth. And where our personal space meets the waveforms and the movements and the shape of the larger space is the way that we experience astrology. So I'm going to begin with some descriptions of eclipses in general, how to work with them, what they represent. And then I'm going to take a look at the two current eclipses and develop things from there. I'm planning also to discuss the sensation of the lunar nodes as apart from eclipses, and then where they meet eclipses. So I'm going to go somewhat free form in this discussion, and thanks for coming along for the ride. So eclipses were the first thing that got my attention in astrology. This is before Chiron. Just before Chiron, I was noticing that eclipses are just these really interesting kinds of things that seem to bend the shape of space and time around them. They're a little bit like black holes, or even stars bend gravity. So they have that gravitas, you might say, this ability to serve as a kind of attractor, but also to, you know, warp the space-time continuum. And when we get near one, it's as if we're in a kind of a vortex. And the vortex has a few different feelings to it. One of those feelings is that certain events are predestined, or you might think karmic. Now, I'm not saying that they are. What I'm suggesting is that there's this feeling around eclipses where it just seems like things are more predestined or more karmic. And we have to go with that energy, right? We're in this feeling and in this characteristic of the landscape where everything is curving in the direction of the eclipse. It's like it's almost like that thing from the Carl Sagan video where he stretches a piece of fabric and places a billiard ball on it, and of course the fabric stretches in the direction that gravity is pulling the billiard ball. And so that's a bit of the effect of an eclipse. There's a bit of a warp, and we're following this warp. Another characteristic of eclipses is a sensation of acceleration. It's akin to this thing from the days of the carburetor, probably before that, called the Venturi effect. A Venturi is the thing in a carburetor. Now nobody has, I guess the really old cars have carburetors, unless you've got fuelies, that vaporizes the fuel and puts it in a condition where it can burn, because liquid gasoline can't burn. You have to vaporize it. And that is done with a Venturi, or it was done with a Venturi. And that is a thing that the airflow carrying the fuel runs through a thing that looks a little bit like an hourglass. And as it goes through the narrow opening, the fuel is vaporized from the increased kinetic energy, I think, that is created when the airflow is run through a narrow pocket. And so like a narrow, not really a pocket, but like a narrower pipe. And it accelerates the speed. It probably raises the temperature a little, and it vaporizes the fuel. And so that sense of the Venturi effect, that acceleration and volatilization, is another sensation of the eclipse. Now, this is all when things are going well and when you have time to contemplate things. If you don't, you just might feel that your life is completely off the rails and out of control. And I assume that since you're listening and you're interested in the way these things work, that you're probably leaning a little bit more toward wanting to learn how to consciously ride the event. Now, eclipses will have influences that relate to your chart. So all events in astrology relate to one's personal natal chart. And it is probable, since you're listening to this as part of the Cancer reading, though a few people have just come in for curiosity about eclipses, that you have something in sign Cancer, rising sign, sun, moon, who knows, possibly lunar nodes. And the eclipses in a sign can be near a point in your sign, or they can be exactly conjunct a point, a point in your sign. Sometimes they're, you know, way off to the other side. You know, you might have the moon in the first degree, and the eclipse is going to take place around 10 degrees, or in the case of the lunar, 24 degrees. And so the closer it gets to you, the more of a personal tap on the shoulder that the eclipse is. And even if you have anything significant in Cancer or Capricorn, which you probably do, there's going to be an enhanced sense of personal meaning. And that's one of those things eclipses do anyway, is they have this enhanced sense of personal meaning for everyone. They have a little bit, but it gets more, you know, detailed when it's talking directly to something in your chart. And I know that anyone who has a point within a couple of degrees of this eclipse is probably wondering, you know, what is this? What is this about? So another sensation eclipses have is that they represent new stretches in the landscape of time. The eclipses, by the way, happen approximately every 5.5 to 6 months. Usually they come in pairs, a solar and a lunar, but sometimes they come in threes, like solar-lunar-solar, or lunar-solar-lunar. We're not in one of those phases right now. We're just in pairs. But it seems like about every 5 years or so, you get one of these patterns where they come in triples. And what eclipses tend to do is to demarcate stretches of time. And stretches of time are about 6 months. But sometimes they represent transitions of much longer phases of time. So you could say that at least 6 month stretches of the landscape are represented in the transition of eclipses, but sometimes much longer. You know, for example, the entire nodal cycle counts, so it could be something running on 9 or 10 or 18 or 19 year cycle, but really it's whatever you manifest it as. So they represent kind of clearing a mountain range, and then you're in this whole other, you know, landscape, watershed, whatever you want to think of it as being, right? Time has contours. We think of time as being this, like a laser beam that just like shoots through the sky, when in reality, time spreads out in all directions, including up and down, and it has details to a very complex landscape. And the landscape is described by all of these planetary cycles in astrology. And so eclipses represent a certain kind of cycle. And the cycle has it's a metacycle, which I'll explain in a moment, has a way of opening up a new stretch of landscape and bringing another one to a close. And so it is very helpful to use eclipses as conscious points of transition, to use them to end things, to use them to begin things, and to use them consciously as a way of setting a pattern for the foreseeable future. So let's talk about that for a second, and then in the next segment, I'll explain this multidimensional effect of the eclipse metacycle. It's not as complicated as it sounds, but it's pretty cool the way that it works and what it reveals about the landscape of time. So there's a few ways to use eclipses. One of which is to, particularly in the case of, for example, a solar eclipse, a moon-sun conjunction, is to resolve what it is you want to end, what you want to bring to a close, and to make a conscious choice to do that. It is fairly rare that people make conscious choices of how they want to live their lives and the direction that they want their lives to go. Normally, we reserve these things for things like choosing what college to go to, choosing who to get married to, making an important job transition, and that kind of thing. But there are many more choices that we make in life. And in reality, the ability to make choices is the only freedom that we have. If you take away all the mysticism and romance and cowboy stuff and all this bravado, blah blah blah. Really, in the end, manipulation, all that. In the end, all we really get to do is make decisions. And so eclipses are a time when decisions count for more, and when you may find that you are in a sense pushed into them, or you get to a point where making a decision one way or another is inevitable. You know that you have to choose, and you have to stop procrastinating and commit yourself to a certain direction or course of action or chosen path in life. And if your circumstances are not permitting of that, if they're kind of tight and if you don't feel like you have many options, this can be scary. And what I have found, just as a human navigating through life and as a person helping other people navigate through life, is that one of the best things that you can do is to first of all know what you want to end, and second of all to know what you want to create. And so that also means, in my school of life, making options for yourself. So one of the exercises I do with clients in the consulting room is just make up options. We see a juncture point coming, like this eclipse, for example, and go through an exercise of making up possibilities. And that can include making up a list of possibilities that you don't want. And so this is a time to consciously engage your volition, your understanding that your life is your life, and to exercise your power of decision. Now, this will work most of the time for most people. There might be circumstances where things are just a little bit too heavy, but I would suggest that a lot of that heaviness that someone might be feeling or that you might be feeling can be lifted by going through a conscious process of choosing, and also recognizing that there is, in truth, nothing in life that is so permanent. No circumstance or situation or choice previously made that is so permanent that there is not a way to either build on the decision, go beyond it, reverse it in some way, or in some other form, use the power of decision. Thank you. So let's unravel some of the astronomical mysteries of what an eclipse is. We all know that there is the solar-lunar cycle. Well, there's the solar cycle and the lunar cycle. Let's take them separately. That's the whole idea. And then we're going to put them together. And then we're going to put them together one more time. So the sun takes about 365 and a quarter days, I think 365.24, something like that, days to go around the sun. And the moon takes about 29 days to go around the sun. Which means that, let's get that exact lunar cycle. Because the lunar cycle is one thing if you count it to the same position, and another if you count it to the sun. If you know what I mean. So the lunar cycle is 27.3 days to orbit the Earth, but the lunar phase cycle, new moon to new moon, is 29.5 days. Okay, so that means that every 29.5 days, approximately, there is going to be a new moon. And when there's a new moon, the moon and the sun do not usually cross paths. The moon will pass a little bit below or a little bit above the sun. And then every 5.5 months, when the sun is close to the ecliptic, that is to say in longitude, declination, the moon will cross the ecliptic at the same time the sun is on the ecliptic, and then you get an eclipse. And so the eclipses are a metacycle of the sun and the moon, which means that there's kind of a cycle within the cycle. It's actually quite musical if you imagine like a rhythm that holds, there's like a rhythm and it holds the same melody pattern for five measures. And then on the sixth measure, the melody pattern changes slightly, but holds the same rhythm. And then it comes back to five measures of the same. And then on the sixth, there's a variant. And then it goes back to the first, and it's this cycle that repeats. And that's what we get with the eclipse cycle. Now, the thing that points to when the sun will be on the ecliptic is the lunar node. And so the lunar node is where the moon passes north or south in declination. I know this is a little hard to describe without diagrams, but in the end, what you get with an eclipse is right at the time that the moon is crossing north or south, the sun is also right there waiting for it, and there's this multiple cycle event that takes place using the lunar cycle, the nodal cycle, the solar cycle, and the solar-lunar cycle. So you've got a lot of cycles. It's like a motorcycle convention. A lot of cycles come together at the same spot, and you get this event. And so what you really have here is a symbol of and the reality of a multi-dimensional event, because many dimensions are involved. There's several dimensions of space involved, and then there's the dimension of time involved, right? So this is a full-on 4D effect. And when we have a full-on 4D effect, we're in another realm of time. So there's something else going on that I don't fully understand, but I have seen seen and studied the effects of this enough to truly respect whatever it is that's going on. Now, and if you're curious about this, go on the serenu.com website, S-E-R-E-N-N-U. Pay your $1 to $10 a month. You can join for as little as a dollar, I believe. And you can use the Eclipse Finder, and you can experiment and see when there were eclipses. And you don't have to be an astrologer to do this. Doing this is how you become an astrologer. So I'll post a little sample of the Cancer Capricorn eclipse schedule for you out of the Serenu website, and then use your curiosity. This is the thing that will drive your study of astrology. But there are you know, all kinds of really interesting events that happen around the time of eclipses. And the thing with those events is that they just seem so much more important. They seem like there is this intensity or heaviness in the air, or the sense of motion, and everything's just going to pick up and go. And you're wondering, like, what is this? So there is a kind of an overlay of a different dimension of time around the time of the eclipses. I don't mean to sound too much like the science fiction author I want to be, but this is actually a thing that I have noticed. And when you look at the patterns that are involved, and the one cycle laid on top of another, and then you figure out that this is all of these syncopated rhythms that hit at the same time, you know, the snare and the bass and the tom and everything line up, and then you feel the sensation, and you have this first experience of time extending in more directions than the past and the future, and there being an intersection of probable realities. This is where you are when you're in an eclipse, and this is why I think it is so necessary to work with eclipses as fully consciously as you can. And so I mentioned in the last section the part about making the beginnings and endings and transitions as conscious as possible, and using eclipses as kind of like energy levers to move something. It's a little like you've got something stuck and it's heavy and the ground is dry, but you know if the ground is wet, the thing will move a little bit more. You tap into the energy of the environment and you're able to do things that you might not be able to do otherwise. So one of the first things I learned about eclipses from a guy that I talked to like every night on the phone in the winter of 1994, 1995, and then stayed friends with for many years. You may have heard of him. His name was David Rell, and he was the owner of the Astrology Center of California, which then became the Astrology Center of America. And he is the person who said, when eclipses are in the neighborhood, make sure that you're doing the things that you want to do. Make sure that you, especially the day of an eclipse, if you can, make sure that you are doing something that's really of your choice and something that you really love a lot. I mean, so personally, back in the days when I was writing for Jonathan Kaner, I always used to get tapped to write horoscopes around the time of eclipses. And I don't think there was very much that Jonathan did in his life that he didn't have full consciousness of the astrology, and he would always toss the horoscope column in the Daily Mail or the Daily Mirror to me around the time of eclipses, and I would just end up writing more and more horoscopes. It would just multiply, and did a lot of building of my writing, my astrology practice, but especially writing horoscopes, because that's what I kept doing. So now, you know, I'm happy with the number of horoscopes I write, and I want you to put more time into music. So you can be pretty sure that next week, after having done this like 6 month sprint since the annual edition, I am going to slow down as much as I can and smoke some pot and make sure that I have my pedals plugged in and I fully dive into music for a couple of days. To multiply that effect. Now, I partly have that choice, but I could also very easily get completely sucked into, running my schedule at full or double speed. I'll still be doing it, Planet Wave schedule, but I'm going to do it in a reduced form and make sure that, for example, music and possibly a little art are mixed in with the equation. And I would strongly suggest that you do something, that you make some energetic investment in what you want the most around the time of these eclipses. And I'll get into the specifics of the chart in the next section and what the dates are. And then in the fourth segment, we'll end with a look forward at the 2020 eclipses. Though I reckon that we're going to have a good idea what 2020 is going to be about from the current eclipse pair, but I'll save that for a little bit in a little bit further down the recording here. The thing I would just suggest is, while you have a little time to organize yourself and make sure that you do something of what you want, and if you're a day late or it's a little bit later in the week, still you're in the zone. Make the investment. Think of it as just like peeing in your corner to let all the other dogs know that you've been there, or planting a flag in the ground, or claiming some element of your energy, or taking ownership of a process. The thing with eclipses is, and I don't mean to ascribe this to some magical property, but it just seems to be a quality that these things have, is the ability to concentrate intention and multiply the results of that. Now, I know people do this every new moon and full moon, and I think that's probably a pretty good idea to do that. But if you really want to get the most energy, eclipses are the time. And like a lot of things, if nothing else, if astrology has no effect whatsoever, and I'm always open to the possibility that this whole thing is one gigantic illusion, which, I mean, Alice Bailey kind of begins esoteric astrology by saying, hello, this is all one big illusion, and the reason astrology works is because it's part of the grand illusion. If you can crack open that thing, if you do, give yourself a year to read it. Is that it's a good exercise at any point to stop and think about what you want to do and to make the investment by doing. I'm of the persuasion that intention is best stated by action, that words count, they can count for a lot, thoughts count, they can count for a lot, but ultimately the place you make your investment in what you want is by taking action of some kind. And I think that small actions count more than we think. Every book starts with one sentence. Every song starts with either one line or the title or three notes that sound good together. And then it grows. And so particularly with an eclipse pair where the new moon comes first and the full moon comes second, this is an invitation to fully engage in your own self-creative process and your own conscious decision to choose who you are, what you want to do, who you want to be. And with that, I think it's vitally important to be fully aware of who you are not, who you no longer want to be, and what you no longer want or need to be doing. And this is the time. So let's take a look at the current eclipse pair, which is, as I said, the first full pair to take place on the Cancer-Capricorn axis in 10 years. I think we had one. Let me just pull up the Serenu website, and now we're in scrolling ahead. This is a long scroll. All right. That's 2020. Leo. Okay, so eclipses first entered the Cancer Capricorn axis 1 year ago with a partial solar eclipse in Cancer. That was followed by a lunar eclipse in Aquarius, a solar eclipse in Aquarius, and then in January of 19, a solar eclipse in Capricorn, followed by a lunar eclipse in Leo. So you see how this works. The eclipses transitioned for a while. So, for example, we had eclipses on the Aquarius-Leo Aquarius cycle for a while, and then they started to mix up with eclipses on the Cancer-Capricorn axis for a while, and now they have moved on to the Cancer-Capricorn axis exclusively. Right, so there's no special, like, definitive meaning to this. You just, you know, observe the way that that things are happening, and you notice the dynamics and the ways that they interact with your chart, and then you have the experience. And I find that it's best not to read too much commentary on eclipses, because for various reasons, some of them based on observation, and some of them based on a level of ignorance about what we actually can do with these things rather than just being subjected to them. They can be pretty negative, and you'll read about locusts and things like that. And you know, eclipses are the thing that feels ominous. Was it Magellan who said he could make the sun go away, and he had merely predicted a solar eclipse based on, you know, using mathematics? I'm surprised that whoever he was messing with, Mayans or somebody, hadn't already figured out that there was an eclipse. So I don't know so much about that story. All those Mesoamericans were much better calendar keepers than we are. The church's ephemeris doesn't even know what day the full moon happens when they're timing Easter. Rob Han read the thing and he said sometimes it's been off by as much as 3 days. So anyway, our calculations are a little bit better, and as I said, this particular eclipse cycle to me is noteworthy mainly because it's the one that we're going through in the next few weeks, fully lodged on the Cancer Capricorn axis. So it's the full activation of the Cancer Capricorn axis, and it begins with a total solar. Now, a total solar means that the moon is close enough to the Earth at the time of the eclipse to completely block out the sun. It is very interesting that though the moon and the sun are two vastly different objects, the sun is a full-on, modestly sized star, and the moon is this hunk of rock that was created at right about the same time that the Earth was, that the two of them are approximately the same size to the eye from the viewpoint of the Earth. I think this is endlessly interesting. And because the two of them are the same size, there's the possibility of eclipses. And there's several kind of eclipses. There's partial eclipses, which where the sun and the moon don't align exactly. There's total eclipses where the sun and the moon align exactly and the moon completely blocks out the sun. And then there are what's called annular eclipses where the moon is a little bit too far away from the Earth and therefore appears smaller than the sun. And while it would be a total eclipse, it does not actually manage to block out the entire sun. That's called an annular eclipse. And they all have different influences. They all have different sensations, but the truth is each one is unique unto itself. So the thing that makes this eclipse pair unique is let's start with activity in Cancer. First of all, we're having a lunar eclipse in a solar eclipse in Cancer next week on the 2nd. Well, you may be listening far in the future. And Mars has just passed through Cancer. So the big news, for those of you listening in the 23rd century, the big news before this eclipse was that Mars passed through the cardinal sign Cancer. And when it did so, it made countless aspects to planets on the cardinal cross. Mars made aspects to Chiron, to Celestia, to Pholus, to Quasar, to Logos, Makemake. Then it lined up with the Saturn-Pluto conjunction, which meant lined up with Eris and Haumea. All of these minor planets are not asteroids. These are minor planets, slow-moving minor planets. Many of them are either dwarf planets or dwarf planet candidates, such as Eris and Pluto and Haumea. And so there was a lot of friction coming from the sign Cancer, which is not always that happy to have Mars in it. It's Cancer prefers things to be a little bit mellower, and wants its warm milk and granola and whatever. And so Mars can be kind of an uneasy player in the sign Cancer. It can be insecure. It can be emotionally contentious, and of course, making all of these aspects to all these other planets created a whole bunch of friction, which you can think of as a kind of a static charge. And then Mars enters Leo, where it's still fully engaged, making a lot of high power aspects, but it's in Leo. It's no longer in Cancer. And then an eclipse comes through Cancer. And to me, this seems like two different things are going on. One of them is that there's a discharge of all of that energy. There is a release and potentially a drop in pressure. And there's one other thing, and I think this is particularly important for those who have Cancer Capricorn as a primary axis in their chart. For example, their ascendant, descendant, in whatever order that might be, or the sun or the moon is on either one of them, is going to make you sensitive to the whole Cancer Capricorn axis. And what we get with a total eclipse is this opportunity to align ourselves in a more precise way with what it is that we're doing and what it is that we want to do. And I could see where Mars going through Cancer for nearly 2 months and mixing it up with these powerful centaur planets such as Pholus and Chiron. I mean, these are some high-powered planets, right? I know that you don't read about them in the daily horoscope most of the time, but for real. And then, finally, Mars worked its way across Cancer and made an opposition to Saturn and Pluto, therefore activating the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. So we're getting a window into what this Saturn slow building, Saturn-Pluto conjunction, exact on January 12th, 2020, is about. And, the election campaign is heating up. We're seeing the Democrats now slugging it out, and other things are heating up as well. And, of course, this has implications in our personal lives. Whatever house you may have the sign Cancer in, Cancer is a personal sign. It's the sign of mother. It's the sign of nurturing. It's the sign, according to Alice Bailey, where souls incarnate into physical existence. Not each individual lifetime, but rather she says, this isn't proving any of this, but this is her theory. It's actually the Tibetan's theory that, the author she was channeling. She was channeling a Tibetan Lama. Basically, kind of kooky new age stuff, but it's a heck of a book. And so we got this kind of maximum friction effect of Mars setting off, knocking on, activating, opposing, squaring all of these other planetary positions. And the thing about the Saturn-Pluto conjunction is that it is an era-defining conjunction, and we're not done yet. It's only 6 months away, right? It's now late June. This thing happens in early January. So we don't really know the exact nature of where things are going, but we're getting soundings, we're getting little clues. We're using our stud finder and we're finding the things that are behind the wall that you can't see unless you have a magnet. Though I think that, you know, from the viewpoint where I'm sitting right now, the eclipses have not happened yet. And when the eclipses have not happened yet, there's things you don't know. There's things that that are shaken out by the eclipse, and so you can trust that process that you're going to have things revealed to you. There's a line in A Course in Miracles I love, which is, you will be told everything you need to know. And speaking as a person who needs to know a lot, I have high needs for information, that I have found that to be true, that I am told what I need to know. I get the information that I need. And so I suggest you trust this process, that you will have revealed to you what you need based on this. Now, the aspects, it's always good to study the aspect pattern of an eclipse. So you print the chart out, and then you draw in any planets that it might be missing that you want to include. And then you sketch out the pattern. And what we see in this pattern is that, first of all, it is clearly opposite the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. Even though it's a few degrees away, it's right there. And in particular, closely opposing Saturn. Saturn, for its part, is sitting right in Capricorn on the south node in Capricorn. And the south node has a bit of the characteristics of Saturn. The whole thing is set in Capricorn, and they're all retrograde. So we have this kind of perfect picture with I'm not sure what it's a perfect picture of, but we have Saturn in its domicile in Capricorn. I happen to be looking at a night chart. This eclipse is going to happen. Well, no, the eclipse happens during the day, but Saturn in Capricorn in the United States, at least, is on the night side of the chart. Saturn in Capricorn prefers to be on the night side of the chart. There's a whole way to study planets using what's called sect, where you get into the whether the planet or the planet in a sign is nocturnal or diurnal. And so Saturn is in its nocturnal condition when it's in Capricorn. Think of it. It's in an earth sign. Capricorn is dark. You can imagine a nice cave at night with a flashlight, and you bring a snack and a little candles to burn and some incense. That's the feeling of Capricorn, of Saturn in Capricorn. And it's conjunct the south node. And it's all retrograde. And so what I'm thinking this particular eclipse is about is some reckoning with the past, where events of the past must be addressed and let go of both. It's not possible to let go of something without addressing it. So you might know what that is. You might have a sense of what that's about, of what piece of history it is that needs to be released. Now, given that Saturn is in this very unusual, I've never seen this before, but I began astrology with Saturn in Aquarius. So that means I've never, consciously as an astrologer lived through Saturn in Capricorn until now. And of course, I've seen a lot of charts, but I just haven't seen any with this particular feature, which is that Saturn and Capricorn in an exact to the degree conjunction with the lunar node in Capricorn, and then it's all retrograde. So that's at 18 degrees of Capricorn. I know it looks like 17, but the minute you're at 1701, you're in the 18th degree. And I just went in the other room and got my copy of An Astrological Mandala by Dane Rudyar. Which is a persistent bestseller that was put out of print. I mean, it's like the grapes of wrath of astrology. I mean, there's absolutely no point in putting this book out of print. Now they're going for like between $50 and $100. If you ever see a copy of this, get it. particularly if you see it for a reasonable price, but they're only going to go up. Again, An Astrological Mandala by Dane Rudyar, R-U-D-H-Y-A-R, one of the astrology books I've used the very most. And the degree symbol for 18 Capricorn is the Union Jack flag flies from a British warship. And the keynote is the protection afforded to individuals and groups by powerful institutions in charge of maintaining order. The symbol reflects conditions prevailing in the past when Great Britain's fleet was policing the seas under the international principle of freedom of the seas. Times have changed, but the concept remains valid. Power is required to maintain social order and relatively peaceful interpersonal as well as international and relatively peaceful interpersonal as well as international relationships. Alas, this power can easily be misused under the pretext of preserving law and order. Justice and compassion must balance social power, and especially the power of privileged groups. Where this symbol appears, the need for protection may be in evidence, or it may be a warning against using power for selfish advantage. This is the third symbol in the 58th fivefold sequence. It brings us to the realization of the ambivalence of political power, its value, and its dangers. Personally, I cannot imagine a more appropriate symbol for Saturn and the South Node to be in this eclipse. Mute solo. All right, there's some music about to come in. I'm going to delay that for a second because I'm running a little over in this section. Let's take a look at the partial lunar eclipse on July 16th. The sun has now crossed the lunar node. It's a 2404 Cancer, and the moon opposes it from 2404 Capricorn. So right before the eclipse happens, the sun makes a series of oppositions to points in Capricorn, which it's currently doing, but then in the 24 hours ahead of the eclipse, the moon makes a series of conjunctions, first to Saturn, then the South Node, and then to Pluto, and then it opposes the sun. So that that ends the story, except that the sun and the moon in this eclipse are square Eris. Eris, if you recall, is the planet that was discovered in, I think it's technically got a 2003 designation. I think the official discovery is listed as 05. Planets can have a variety of discovery dates, depending on how you count, like the first photograph or what have you, although Michael Brown has given the time that he personally realized that the thing was there, and that's the time that I use, and that was in 2005. In any event, Eris, in case you're wondering if this discovery means much, is the planet that forced the reorganization of the entire solar system. In other words, there was no definition of a planet up until the discovery of Eris. I mean, think about that for a second. This is in the early 21st century, and the first planet is discovered by science in 1787 by William Herschel, and then an asteroid is discovered in 1801 on New Year's Day, and no one has a definition for planet. And so along with Pluto getting quote-unquote demoted to dwarf planet and Ceres getting promoted from asteroid to dwarf planet and Eris being invented basically into a dwarf planet, that category, that's what happened with Eris. It changed the definition of Pluto. It changed the definition of a planet. It opened up a whole new phase of planetary science. And in the spirit of Eris being the Greek counterpart of Discordia, Eris is the goddess of discord. But there's really much more than that. There have been some brilliant Eris moments. In history, Steve Colbert, speaking at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, was Mercury conjunct Eris. So it has a subversive quality to it, and it has kind of a disruptive quality to it, and we have this big lunar eclipse exactly square Eris, by which I mean square to 1/4 of 1 degree. This is really impressive. And in addition, the lunar eclipse is conjunct the Saturn-Pluto opposition. The Saturn-Pluto opposition hasn't formed yet, but when it forms, it's going to be at about 23.5 degrees of Capricorn, and this eclipse is very early in 24 degrees of Capricorn. So it's very close to that alignment. And so my theory on this is that, you know, we have this big thing coming up, the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. Then we have Saturn will hold a square to Eris for most of 2020. And then Pluto begins a 2-year process of making squares to Eris through, I think, up till 2022 or 23 or something. And all of this is combined with the United States Pluto return. PlanetWaves does have some articles about that. And I'll do my best to make sure that all of those get on the resources page for this. And if I forgot, please remind me, efc@bookofblue.com. Hey, you said there would be some articles there. And we'll put them there. It's a little bit of a process going from this recording to the quote-unquote product, so I can forget things sometimes. In any event, I think that this eclipse is going to pull back the veil on what we can expect to see coming with the Saturn-Pluto conjunction and Pluto square Eris. The Saturn-Pluto conjunction is a big deal no matter what. It's just one of those aspects when Saturn and Pluto make a 90-degree type aspect, conjunction square or opposition, it's a big deal. The last opposition was 9/11 and the beginning of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. The previous conjunction in 82 was the beginning of the kind of Reagan Revolution and this bizarre kind of neoconservatism we're living under now. But the thing is that neoconservatism has given way to this other weird thing called neoliberalism, and the neo means basically complete fucking bullshit, because neoconservatism is not conservatism, and neoliberalism is not liberal, and so we're looking at a kind of a mystery into where this is all going, this confrontation of the forces. And you know, I just happened to be scrolling through the planets last night, maybe two nights ago, and I saw some douchebag on Fox saying all Democrats want is to have abortions anytime, all the time, at any phase in the pregnancy, blah, blah, blah. I start making up a satire. Democrats want abortion machines in subway stations. So this neoconservative viewpoint is a complete work of fiction. And then if you look closely at the neoliberal viewpoint, it too is a complete work of fiction, because not that many people really want this thing, that this agenda. Both positions are equally sold out to the corporate system. So the question is, what is going to intervene in this completely dysfunctional political process? My favorite thing, though I've been disappointed in the past, my favorite thing about this eclipse on the 16th, by the way, in Capricorn, is that on the very next day, Bob Mueller testifies before two different committees of the House of Representatives. So the American public is going to get to meet Bob Mueller as a television figure, many people for the first time, because most people have not seen, he stays away from TV, so he's not necessarily all that real to people as a TV figure, which is what makes you real, sadly, in the world these days. And TV means video and streams, Hulu, YouTube, and all that stuff. As long as it's video, it's real. In other words, as long as it's presented to us as a complete illusion of pixels and scan lines, then we think it's real. This is completely fucking inside out. But in any event, that's what happens. And I think it's quite exciting and quite thrilling that that his presentation is going to have the amplification effect of the eclipse. And we're going to see something, those of us who are looking, about the historical process and the direction that it's taking. And it's now no longer like a specialty item or a hobby. I think everyone is concerned about the historical process. And we now have an administration where any meek progress we were making, whether it was on keeping nuclear bombs out of Iran's hands, or on regulation of GMOs, or on any protection of the environment, there is now this orgy of rolling all of that back. And with global warming continuing to run out of control, the situation is much worse than government officials are letting us know. Everyone needs to be concerned about the historical process. You now no longer can just lose yourself in a bowl of cornflakes. You know, everyone vaguely, meekly conscious is thinking about this, concerned about it, or really worried. And so we need to do more than be concerned and worry. And owing to the personal nature of eclipses, you may find that, you know, you feel a personal calling. I haven't mentioned this, but eclipses have a way of taking the wide, vast, and impersonal calling and making it seem like it's personally for you, like it's a, you know, handwritten invitation from the universe to you. So let's pay attention to these and notice where something squeaks or moves or pivots or makes change of any kind, and feel whatever calling it is that is summoning you to take part in some way. And this, of course, includes taking a more active role in your own life. But sometimes you go right from taking a more active role in your own life to realizing that you can take a much more active role in the community life. All right, let's take a short break, and then I'll be back with a look ahead at the second set of eclipses in 19 and a bit about the eclipses in 2020. Let's plunge into the future. There are quite a few eclipses between now and the end of 2020. So I'm going to handle the next pair, the ones at the end of this year, beginning of next, in higher resolution than the ones in 2020. But I will summarize those. By 2020, the eclipses are shifting onto the Gemini Sagittarius axis, and by the end of 2020, the last eclipse pair is solidly on the Gemini Sagittarius axis, which, by the way, in the ancient system of astrology, are the signs that rule the lunar nodes. And I have not been able to quite pick up on the Gemini Sagittarius angle of the lunar nodes. Perhaps I need to go to school with a Vedic astrologer, because that is something that's more important in Vedic astrology. But even when I don't understand an astrological rule or a guideline from the old days, I keep it in mind when working with it. And I figure if I'm observant enough, then I'll get a clue, right? So let's keep watching, and maybe you have an insight into the connection between the lunar nodes and Gemini Sag. Just looking at the table of essential dignities, which is hanging on the wall here. I've got to turn my head and turn the microphone. Here's how this looks. The North Node is exalted in Gemini. So it's not rulership, but if you look up the word exalted in a dictionary, it sounds a lot like the king or the ruler. You think of it as kind of more of being a guest who's treated with the honor of the king. And then the South Node is exalted in Sagittarius. So that's interesting, given that the North Node is sometimes said to have the properties of Jupiter. But some of this stuff is, from the mid 20th century, where there were a lot of misunderstandings about ancient astrology, because it wasn't until the 1990s, thanks to Roberts, Hand, Zoller, and Schmidt, the founders of Project Hindsight, that we finally started to get some accurate translations of the ancient works. And while I'm on the subject, I suggest that if you are serious about astrology and you don't mind being a little bit extra studious, there's two monographs to read. They're short and they're dense and they're very well written. The first is called Night and Day by Robert Hand. And then the second is called Whole Sign Houses, The Oldest House System by Robert Hand. And these are wonderfully written. He's a great writer and even better scholar. And I have found these books to be two of the most helpful, no bullshit astrology books that help me assemble my ability to read a chart. Because a lot of things in a chart don't appear in the chart. I was thinking about this last night. Like the Aries point doesn't appear in the chart. The sign cusps don't appear in the chart. All the old eclipses that you look at. And I haven't mentioned that sometimes these eclipses have effects that last for 10 or 20 years, where you start to see things that are conjunct the point of an old eclipse. And so as you go through eclipses, you start to collect them, kind of like, you know, pieces of jade or tarot card decks or whatever it is that you like to collect, rocks from the beach. And you make a collection of eclipses and you know where they are in the chart. And so they sometimes repeat in the same position, even though they're part of a completely different cycle called the Saros cycle. And sometimes they're part of the same cycle and they're not exactly in the same position. But the points where eclipses occur remain sensitive for a long time. And that is worth tracking. Anyway, let's get the next set up on. Come on. I'll try to get this to close. I'm going to look for these next ones in a program called Sprite. And I'm going to use the tools I've got up. I'll take a screenshot of the way that I'm working. The chart. No, wrong program. The chart animation on the right is a program called Sprite. And you'll see that I've got two navigation tools open in Sprite. One is Events and one is Speed. So with Events, you can find things like a full moon or new moon. And with Speed, you can race through time and get them. You can set Sprite to watch your whole life go by and then watch it backwards and watch it go forwards. So now we are in, we've talked about the July 2nd and July 16th, and now we are up to the Boxing Day eclipse annular. I would note that this is an Aries point event. Things on the Aries point, meaning early in the cardinal sign. So the word Aries point, by the way, is a word that means early in the cardinal sign. So the Aries point technically is the first degree of Aries, also called the sidereal vernal point. Now, I am not a Uranian astrologer. There's a branch of astrology called Uranian astrology, but I have allowed myself to be influenced by their observations and thinkings and methods. And so some of the best astrologers I've worked with are from this branch of astrology called Uranian astrology. And it is the Uranian astrologers who notice the power of the Aries point, the first degree of Aries, a.k.a. the sidereal vernal point, where the it's the first degree of Aries where the tropical year begins. And also where the sidereal zodiac is reckoned with the tropical zodiac. There's two zodiacs, one that uses the stars as its reference, and then the one that we use, which uses the tropics and the sun's aspects to the tropics as its reference frame. And where the two zodiacs meet is one Aries, a.k.a. the sidereal vernal point, sidereal meaning stars, vernal meaning the spring equinox point. And then by extension, the first degree of Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn are also associated with the sidereal vernal point. I know this could start arguments in some places, but I'm telling you what Uranian astrologers taught me and then what I've tested. I never teach anything untested, and by tested, I mean like 10 years or something like that, long enough to have a clue or a consensus of people who have taught me. Okay, so cutting to the point here, and I figure you don't care if I go on for a while, so I'm just going to keep rolling until I say everything I've got to say. I'm out of musical bits, but let me take a screenshot of the setup that I'm looking at right now, so you can see how I'm working, and then the next solar eclipse after the lunar eclipse on the 16th is an annular solar at 4:07 Capricorn. So each one of those little bumps is a new moon. Sag new moon, boom, Cap new moon. Oh, good thing we looked at this chart. So let's send this to you. So I'm making a screenshot. Tad's at work right now. Cap annular December 26th. All right. So December 26th is 4 degrees of Capricorn. And the last time there was an eclipse in this vicinity that I remember was in around 04. I'm sure there was one in the next cycle. And unless that was just a new moon, I'm not sure. But in any event, it was associated with the Banda Aceh Indonesian earthquake. And when I was casting charts for the year or the season or whenever it was, I was living in France, and I wrote across the top of the chart Aries Point event, and then boom, on the 26th, there was this massive, like an 8.9 quake. And so especially with points in Capricorn, you want to be looking for this. And so when we study this eclipse, we see that it's the first planet is Pholus conjunct the sun moon. Pholus conjunct the sun moon means this is a high pressure event, possibly a high impact event. And it's also conjunct Jupiter, and it's also conjunct a point not shown. Remember, I was mentioning points not shown in the charts. Some of them include the planets that are not listed by commercial astrology software, unless you get Solar Fire, in which you can put any damn thing you please in. And by the way, Solar Fire is a program that was invented by Uranian astrologers such as Rob Hand. So these Uranian astrologers have certainly proven themselves to be useful members of the community, even if people think they have wacky ideas. But I'm not that silly. I'll listen to anything one of them says. And just to keep my endorsement going, I've always found them to be very helpful. Like Madeline at the Solar Fire office answers my questions and sends me free copies of Solar Fire. All right. So this eclipse is conjunct Pholus, Quasar, and Jupiter. It's a south node event. And this... I don't want to be too predictive here. But if we look at what's in Capricorn, it's Quasar, Not Shown, Pholus, Sun, Moon, Jupiter, South Node, Ceres, Saturn, and Pluto. This is the eclipse that that sets up the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. Notice in this chart, again, for 12/26/19, how close Saturn and Pluto are. They're only about 1.5 degrees apart. That is very close, and that's because the one and only exact conjunction is going to be on the 12th. And Jupiter's in the picture, and this eclipse is a part of the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. The pattern is there, the configuration is there, the planets are all in place, and it's just a matter of a very short period of time. And so the it's almost like a little jump to accelerate things. A lot of points in Capricorn, trine Uranus in Taurus. Without predicting an earthquake, this is perfect earthquake astrology. This is what it looks like when you want to see it. A lot of crunchy stuff in Capricorn or Taurus, for example, is associated with the Earth moving. And then we're going to have Sun, Moon, Jupiter in an alignment, and Saturn right there. So all of this massive gravity is being pulled in one direction. The two largest planets are in Capricorn, Jupiter and Saturn, the gas giants. And so all the energy is pulling that way, and then the Moon and the Sun align exactly, and all the energy is pulling in the same direction. So just based on a gravitational effect, and yes, the planets have gravitational effect more than the obstetrician, because the obstetrician is not yanking the Sun out of its orbit, right? People say, well, the obstetrician has more of a gravitational effect than Jupiter, 1,200 times the size of the Earth. When someone says that, either laugh or try not to laugh. Jupiter makes the Sun itself wobble. Okay, so last I checked, it wasn't an obstetrician who made the Sun wobble based on its gravity. So this is a big one. Then, and it's conjunct Jupiter. That's, you know, always look at the classical planets. So the conjunction to Jupiter suggests that the impact will be magnified in some way, and Jupiter is usually pretty helpful. And we're likely to be seeing some crazy controversy in government at this point, because this is going to be the focus, and in many ways the distraction of 2020 is this complete fucking obsession with government, when really we need to be obsessed with community and with service and with helping each other and with doing the right thing and acting in ways where we display the conscience that we think that the bad people are not displaying. Jump to the next new moon. That's the Aquarius new moon. We need to go back 2 weeks to Feb 9, 2020. Oops. That's the exit music starting. Let me mute that. Mute. Solo. All right. Now, the next lunar eclipse is on 1/10/2020. Here's how to read this. Remember that we're in the realm of the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. That's the big metacycle, right? That's the rarity of events, to me, is the first thing you assign in the order of calls, right? You want, what makes this an important event? Well, how rare is it? That's the first thing I'm looking for. And so it's not, you know, there's a lot of things you have to consider in the order of calls for how to weight the influence of an event. And here we have Saturn-Pluto, this rare, like, 37-year event. And God knows when the last time they were conjunct in Capricorn. I'll figure that out. But it was, it could have been more than 1,000 years, because you have to have Pluto in Capricorn at the same time Saturn is in Capricorn to have the Saturn-Pluto conjunction in Capricorn. And so there's only a very slim chance that Saturn's going to be in Capricorn when Pluto's in Capricorn, because Pluto's not in Capricorn for very long, only about 14, 15 years out of a 248-year cycle, right? So it might be that I'll never find one. It might be one will turn up in the year three. So we'll see. But in any event, we've got one now. And in the order of calls, that's on the top of the list. And it is presaged by two eclipses, right? There's a solar on Boxing Day on the 26th, and then there's a lunar on the 10th when Saturn-Pluto is exact to 10 arc minutes. So these eclipses are part of the vibrational acceleration of the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. And we have Jupiter on the south node of the moon, and we have then an eclipse that is in an exact opposition to Mercury. Take a look at this chart. Mercury is at 20 and 6 minutes, and the Sun is at 20 and no minutes. That's a conjunction. Then 1 degree later is Ceres, 1 degree later is Saturn, and in the same degree is Pluto. This is a heck of an event. And it's just, you know, as my friend Calissa McGoldrick wrote in a song a long time ago, what can you say to a tidal wave? Let's deal with the squares first. Once again, we have an event that is square Eris. And so you're going to hear the words square Eris a lot of times in the next couple of years, because a lot of things are square Eris. And we have an eclipse that is square Eris with Mercury square Eris with Ceres square Eris, which makes me nervous because the connection of Ceres to food and farming in the age of global warming indicated by and social order and political breakdown indicated by the Saturn-Pluto conjunction, and that's all square Eris. This could be a societal bout with chaos. Not on a massive scale in the States anyway, but I think enough to warn people that we need to behave ourselves. Is that a fair thing to say? Also, you know, like, wake the fuck up, because we're acting for the most part like there's absolutely nothing wrong, and you know, talking about global warming at a party. I mean, I don't go to many parties, but is it better to have a turd in the punch bowl or to talk about global warming at a party? In this chart, notice out in Libra is Juno, that thing at 1911 of Libra. And Juno has an element of get busy, like do something. She has a little touch of social justice warrior. She can get carried away as well. All right, so that's that. So bear in mind, the next eclipse pair after this homes right in on the Saturn-Pluto conjunction, square Eris, but we're already there with the July 16th, 2019 lunar eclipse. All right, so now after that, on the 10th, now we're looking for, and that's the last one on the Cancer-Capricorn axis, where both are on the Cancer-Capricorn axis. The next pair is Cancer-Sagittarius. So let's go out to that one. That's going to be a penumbral lunar, and that is going to be the Cancer full moon. Nope, we did that one. Now we're looking at the Sagittarius full moon. Let's go. Whew. Wow. I'm glad I'm doing this. By the way, I'm of the belief that even if you don't fully comprehend these charts, which no one does, that just having exposure to any facts about the planetary pattern helps you prepare. So what do we got here? By June 5th, 2020, we're looking at a whole new landscape. The eclipse has now moved to Sag Gemini. So the new moon solar lunar eclipse is in Sag, and this is conjunct the Great Attractor. Each one of these seems to pull the veil off of something bigger and bigger. And when you see the Great Attractor, think bigger and bigger. Additionally, Saturn has moved into Aquarius, has already gone retrograde. So Saturn is in its second sign of rulership. It's in its other domicile. Its domicile, night domicile, is Capricorn, and its day domicile is Aquarius. Saturn is very strong in all the earth and air signs, but I think particularly has an affinity for the air signs. The lunar nodes have moved into Sag Gemini, and we have an eclipse of the moon square Mars to the degree conjunct Neptune. Beware of war and lies leading to war. So far, since Iraq and Afghanistan, I will say that the United States has done fairly well staying out of new wars. The devastation of Yemen by drone war was effectively covered up by Obama. That was a good job, Barack, not letting that get out into the public. The secret drone war. I always thought you were a great Republican. And this is going to be more overt. But we have managed, with the exception of Yemen, I think, object to war on purely moral grounds. So let's keep doing that. And not be hoodwinked by this. All right, the next event is going to be a new moon eclipse. On June 21, 2020, right smack on the Aries point, meaning the first degree of Cancer. Now, there is... So, first of all, yet another Aries point event leading into the election of 2020. Bear that in mind. So... what the astrology is describing is things that ripple out bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's several ways to have that. Eclipses are one. Eclipses on the Aries point is another. Anything on the Aries point is another. Anything associated with the Great Attractor in mid-Sagittarius is yet another. And so we keep getting these repeated references to things that just keep getting bigger and bigger. This is an annular eclipse, so it's the one where the sun is appears to be larger than the moon, and so it may or may not look like an eclipse. I saw an eclipse on a clear day with the sun in the path of annularity, and there was absolutely nothing. It was probably a little too close to the horizon. I've seen another annular eclipse, or maybe it was a partial solar, where it was really freaky, where we got the double shadow effect. In any event, on the summer solstice of 2020, there is an eclipse. And when you combine the eclipse and the solstice, that's a pretty big deal, right? So, because it's how many cycles can you pile on to one another? And then eventually the slot machine hits three cherries. All right, let's take a look at the corresponding lunar eclipse. And this is on 5 July 2020, and now we're solidly in the middle of the Cancer-Capricorn axis again, and the sun is conjunct Vesta, and the moon is opposite Vesta, and there is a Jupiter-Pluto conjunction. Now, the Jupiter-Pluto conjunction is a beautiful thing. The Jupiter-Pluto conjunction talks about the ability to connect the golden thread between all spiritual paths. It's sort of like the soul within the concept of religion. And we could think of the concept of religion as being Jupiter in Capricorn, because it's like a structure and it's kind of dodgy and stiff and stuck. But Pluto is the connection to the soul piece. And this was known before Pluto Evolutionary Journey of the Soul, but I think that among the things that Jeffrey Green got right was that there is something about this process of cultivating one's soul that is associated with Pluto. And this is Jupiter conjunct Pluto. And once again, I'll use my two favorite words of the day, square Eris. So there you go. Let's find the next, and we'll be right out at the end of 2020 at this point. Now, remember that in early November of 20 is the election, and the election is going to be followed by a pair of eclipses. So that in the lame duck phase of the presidential term, unless Trump quote unquote wins, is going to contain two eclipses. Let's go to 30 November 2020. That is a lunar eclipse. So I'm going to hear a few thumps. That is the Aquarius full moon. That is the Pisces full moon. That is the Aries full moon. That is the Taurus full moon on Halloween conjunct Uranus. That's a great chart. Mark your calendar, October 31st, 2020. That'll be a really fun Halloween. I might even wear a costume for that one. It's the full moon conjunct Uranus. Sun opposite Uranus, moon conjunct Uranus. Kaboom. That's an exciting one. Then let's go to November 30th, 2020. That is penumbral lunar eclipse, as was the one on 5 July 2020. Penumbral lunar eclipse means that the moon grazes through the penumbra of the Earth's shadow. It doesn't go straight through the shadow. It grazes the edge. By the way, personally, I think these are the most interesting eclipses to look at because the moon doesn't go out, but it catches the rim of the shadow and you get the spatial effect. You see the space between the Earth and the moon, because the moon is just slightly dimmed, and you can imagine that that's the shadow of the Earth. It's fucking crazy. So there's going to be a couple of these, and you can see a lunar eclipse, by the way, anywhere it's dark, and you can see the moon, unlike a solar eclipse, which has a path of annularity or a path of totality. A lunar eclipse, if you can see the moon and it's dark, you can see the eclipse. So this is a lunar eclipse right after the election, about three weeks later on 11/30/20. It is square Nessus. It is square Vesta. Just seems to be fairly typical of the times we are in. And for this, we still have Pholus, Pluto, Jupiter, now Pallas, and Saturn back in Capricorn. All right, let's see if we get anything more on the last eclipse of 2020, 14 December 2020. That's going to be involving the galactic center. Okay, and so we now have a total 2020 ends, not with a whimper, but a bang, stealing from my friend T.S. Eliot, with a total lunar eclipse conjunct the galactic center. My feeling about the last weeks of 2020 is that whatever happens, whether there is or isn't an election, which is the first time I've ever said those words seriously, whether Trump wins, loses, or steals the election, whether someone else wins the election, those last weeks, the lame duck phase of 2020, from the election to the inauguration, are going to be a deeply reflective time where the main question is like, what the fuck are we doing? And I would encourage you to ask that question. It's a good question. And the thing about eclipses is they are one of the places where the plane of the wider reality around you intersects with the plane of your life. And where there are these planar intersections, it's not always easy to see the shape of the thing that's intersecting. But where there is an eclipse, we get the ability to see a little bit further into a dimension that opens up for us that is a bit different than the direction that we are living in right now. So I wish you much consciousness and the power of choice. Remember, we're now in eclipses, so skipping away from all this futuristic stuff, looking out a couple of years from now, remember to do what you need to do, wrap things up that you need to wrap up, and make sure that you have some fun over the next couple of weeks. Tell the world what you want. Tell existence what you want by doing what you want, and start some trends that you want to grow and want to persist. All right. I have thoroughly enjoyed doing this on this lovely Saturday afternoon where I've been coming and going from the farmer's market. And do my thing as a friendly neighborhood astrologer. If you want to write to me, efc@bookofblue.com. The advantage to that email address is that I'm on no lists, and the BitTorrent of Planet Waves emails, which is we use a lot of bandwidth communicating with each other in emails. We run the whole business on email, is not come into that box. So I'm very likely to see it. Once again, efc@bookofblue.com. Thank you so much for being a Planet Waves customer. We have all kinds of great stuff to check out. I try to leave no part of the work uncovered, including for people who are not my private clients. I want to make sure everyone has access to the best stuff. So give this another play. Drive with it on. You're going to hear things and make connections from part one part to the next. And I wasn't even working with a single written word of outline. I just proceeded in a kind of intuitive fashion based on having made many presentations about eclipses and all hail solar and lunar eclipses on the Cancer Capricorn axis. Happy birthday, and bye for now. Thank you.